Right. Get this party started. Today we got a special guest with us, Jason Cutter. He is a telesales persuasion beast, and he's going to work with us today on authentic persuasion, which congratulations on your recent trademark of that, Jason. And
thank you.
As a way of getting started, just tell the telesales beast here who you are.
Yeah, so I'm a consultant. I wrote a book. It's called Selling with Authentic Persuasion, Transformed from Order Taker to Quota Breaker. It came out last year. I'm transitioning to a brand new podcast, but I have a previous podcast called The Authentic Persuasion Show. It's 400 episodes of that. How much of a beast I am, it's 5 days a week. So I was doing that and I just stopped a couple months ago. And now I'm starting a new podcast that's called the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. So I'm recording episodes that'll launch later this month, which is going to be awesome. I've been in sales for 18 years, call centers, telephone sales. My first job was in mortgage and then from there went pretty much all over the phone. And, you know, to get here, I took the path that most everyone does in sales. I have a bachelor's degree in marine biology. I tagged sharks for a few years. I worked at Microsoft doing tech support for a few years and then ended up in sales, which is kind of the path that, you know, I think nobody takes that path, but everyone kind of takes a circuitous route and falls into sales, you know, for most of us here.
Nice. So authentic persuasion. Why that personal branding? Why authentic persuasion?
Yeah. So for me, I grew up as a kid, as a shy, awkward, bullied kid. I was an only child. I still am an only child. But two analytical parents. So my mom was a banker and in finance. My dad was in engineering, and they both moved their way up in their respective organizations. But two analytical parents, one of which my mom, who was kind of more in control of the finances, she hated salespeople, absolutely hated salespeople. Her first job after high school was working in the back office of a furniture store. And she would hear all the salespeople come in after they would interact and sell to people and all of the terrible things they would say about customers, what they did to customers. And so she's like, sales is terrible. Like salespeople, you have to be cautious of and worried of. And then growing up as a kid, every few years when we wanted to buy a new car, it was 4-6 hours at a dealership where I'm sitting in a lobby that smells like stale coffee and tires watching, you know, I'm a little bit older than some of you in the room, maybe not Jake, but you know, we're in the same age. It was three channels. One was set to sports. I'm sitting there on a Sunday afternoon. All I want to do is play and I'm stuck there while my mom is just tearing apart car salespeople in order to not get screwed over. And so that left quite an impression on me, such that, you know, like I said, I have my bachelor's degree in marine biology. I literally chose sharks over people as a career path and a life path. Like that's how much me and people didn't really get along. And life did what it did. And I realized I am pretty good with people, but in my own way, that was not selling. And so I wasn't intentional about it. It wasn't until I started writing the book that I really dove into what I did to be successful, what I helped other people, like hundreds of salespeople that I've seen come, the ones who didn't make it and, you know, what they were missing and what they didn't do. And that's when the authentic persuasion framework hit me. And that combination of being authentic to you, and that's what the consumer really wants. I mean, they might fall for the slimy, gross used car sales pressure manipulation, but that's not what they want. What they want is a professional. They want someone to help them make a decision. And then that's where I put that together. The authentic persuasion framework is just that. And when you do that, especially when it aligns with you and who you are, then it can be very successful when you apply that to any conversation. And keeping in mind, everything in life is sales. I mean, if you want to get your boss to agree with your plan, if you want to get your significant other to choose the movie you want to go see, that's all about persuasion. Everything else, everything in life is persuasion, sales. Somebody's persuading somebody to agree with them in some way. And then when you apply that authentic persuasion piece to that, then it changes the way you view all of that.
Awesome. So how about selling an intangible like life insurance over the phone? How does one authentically persuade another to make a buying decision of an intangible?
Yes. So here's the interesting thing is I have never sold a product in all of my career, in all of my time. I have never sold a tangible physical product that someone can see and then they go, oh yeah, I would like that. That is great. I will take it now. I have never done that. I went from mortgage to helping people who are in foreclosure not lose their homes, to helping people with credit card debt get into debt management, credit counseling, to helping people who had student loan debt, helping them manage their payments and get into that. And then for all of my clients that I've had, except for one client that's a furniture retail furniture chain, all of my clients have been intangibles as well. Software as a service, products as services, like what you're saying. So what's interesting is, I'll tell you on a complete side note, I have fantasized for years, even when I was in corporate world, taking my 2 weeks vacation as a VP of sales, getting a job selling cars so I could sell something physical and tangible. I know that's about all I would want to do because I don't think it's really a good way to go, but I think that would be fun to have something that's right there. It's physical. So I can totally relate when it comes to life insurance, any kinds of insurance, anything like that. And that service, it's tough because you're selling something that somebody, especially life insurance, something they don't want to think about. They don't want to admit that they need. They know it's important, but they could also just put their head back in the sand and they could just totally ignore that and just keep living life. And then, you know, assuming they don't need it, right? And so I think one of the biggest things is having a process where you're spending most of the time asking questions, uncovering the needs and the wants and the desires. And I'll tell you, here's the one thing that separates usually the order takers from the quota breakers, from the sales professionals. And when I've seen it successful with anybody I've ever worked with, is the one thing as a salesperson that you need to know before you move forward, before you pass go, before you continue the conversation, or before you set up another follow-up call, the one thing you must know is why do they want or need what you're selling? In this case, life insurance. You have to know that. Why do they want or need this? Here's the trap that a lot of salespeople get into is they know what the product is. Let's say the life insurance. They know how it would benefit people. They know the value. They know that it would be good. And so they just go into it. Most salespeople just assuming everyone should want it, right? And they know the value. And most salespeople then end up talking more than listening. They end up explaining more than asking questions because they just know, like, I know I can help you. Here's life insurance. Here's how it works. And here's the benefits. And the challenge is when you're doing that mode, then you're selling it to them and you're trying to convince them. But what you want to do is you want to spend all the time necessary. It could be 2 minutes. It could be an hour to answer that question in your head. Why do they want or need what you're offering? Now, some prospects, some people, you might talk to them and they'll tell you right away, I need life insurance because this, this, and this. Okay, sounds good. Now you have something you can solve. Now you have something you can serve them with and provide them with that will accomplish that goal. If you don't know the answer to that question, what happens is you're hoping. You're purely an order taker because you're hoping that they're going to be motivated enough and you're hoping that they're going to drive the buying decision in the conversation. If you don't know that and you're relying on them, if they knew the answer to that question strong enough, they would have come out with it and they would just order it or buy it and they wouldn't really need to talk to you, right? So that's the difference. So when somebody knows what they want and why they want it, they'll just buy it. Think about yourself in any of your life. You're like, okay, I want or need a new cell phone, right? You don't need to go to the store and have someone convince you that you need to buy it. You know what you want. It's when you don't know what or why. You know you should do something, but you don't really know why or how it fits in. That's when you need some professional help from a sales professional. And so that's the big key, I would say, with the life insurance.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. So I heard you a couple of times talk about, you know, being an order taker. So how does one go from order taker to master closer?
So I think it's a couple of things. One is is understanding that what I just talked about and being able to answer that question. Again, do not pass go. A lot of people get off the phone and I'll ask them when I'm training them or I'm on the sales floor and I'll say, hey, what happened with that? Oh, they need to think about it. Okay, why did they need this? Oh, I don't know. I mean, I just assume they need it. Okay, yeah, so you're done, right? If they ever call you back, it's because they realized it. But when you call them for your follow-ups, they're not going to answer and they're not motivated because you don't know. So part of it is knowing that. Part of it is having a framework and something that works. For me, I call it, I've never been able to come up with a better name, but REFU. So the framework that I teach and use under Authentic Persuasion is rapport, empathy, trust, hope, urgency. And I have a bunch of stuff out there online. I don't want to take up all the time here to go through all those steps. So if you want to look it up, it's rapport, empathy, trust, hope, urgency. And not to change what you're doing as a sales process, but just making sure you check all those boxes in your conversation in the right order so that it works effectively. And then third, and this is the most important, is you have to understand in your mindset that you are a sales professional. And if you're not, you have to get to that point where you understand it. You have to work on your skills. You have to be good enough in your mind and confident enough that you know you're a sales professional. And if you can't get there, then honestly, probably shouldn't be in sales. And I think that's fair because sales isn't for everybody. But the key is in that shift, right? To go from the order taker to the sales professional to the master closer, is that you realize that you're the professional and you're the one who can help that person. And you realize that sales is service. Sales is something I'm doing for you and with you, not something I'm doing to you. So most people in sales, they think, oh, sales is something I'm doing to you. I'm selling you something. I'm getting paid. My job is to convince you. My job is to push you. I got to close you. I have to have tactics. I have to have all these lines. I got to trap you. I got to use the alternate close. I have to do this. I have to use NLP. And it's like, no. I mean, some of that stuff is important to move people who are stuck. But in general, what you want to do is operate like a professional. And so let me give you an example of what that looks like so that you can think about it in your sales career, the difference from an order taker. So imagine that you broke your arm, right? So you fall down, break your arm, you got to go to the emergency room. And so you go to the emergency room, doctor sees you, goes through the exam process, does an x-ray, does an exam, comes back a little while later and says, hey, your arm is broken. You have a fracture right here. We're going to have to reset the bones. Then we're going to put it in a cast. And then what we need to do is examine you in 6 weeks and hopefully it'll be better. And here is a brochure about broken arms. Here's my business card. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to send you a follow-up email because I'm sure you need to think about it. Maybe talk to somebody in your family, maybe your spouse or your parents. I'm sure you need to research this. And so here's the brochure and the business card. Follow up. I'm going to send you an email. I'll follow up with you next week. If you have any questions, let me know. Otherwise, we'll talk next week, right? Like, you're laughing because that's ridiculous. That would literally be malpractice, right? And why is that? Well, the difference between doctors and salespeople is doctors actually took an oath. They took the Hippocratic Oath. That part of it says they will not cause undue harm. And if they have somebody that they can treat, they have an obligation. They have a professional responsibility. They have a duty to help people they can help, right? If they did that, it would be a personal failure. And it would be shocking. If that happened to you, you'd be like, what the hell? I'm here. I have a broken arm. I need help now. Like, I don't get it. Like, what happened? Unfortunately, that's what a lot of salespeople do. They get to that point and they feel like sales is gross. And if I push for the close, or I just assume the close and I just move them forward, even though I have the solution, for exactly what their need or want is. A lot of people, because of past experiences in their life, feel that that is gross. Because I guarantee before you decided to go into a sales career, you were a customer, or you had family or friends who were a customer, and you bought something and it felt gross. And you felt manipulated and you regretted it as soon as it was done. Maybe as soon as you drove away from the parking lot, you're like, damn it, can't believe that happened. And then the impression is that is wrong. And so when you enter in sales, you go, don't do that. Golden rule, treat other people like you like to be treated. I promise internally, I will never make somebody else feel that way. But what you're missing is the professional aspect. And so what happens in that doctor example? Well, here's what really happens. And I know this, not for myself, because I've never broken a bone, but I've had enough family members who have and been there, so I know the process, is you go in, they do the exam, they do the x-rays, they do their process, they do their due diligence so they can diagnose it. And so once they come back with the diagnosis, they say it's broken, we're gonna need to reset it, we're gonna need to put a cast on it, it's gonna hurt. Then what we'll do is we'll give you some pain meds. We'll schedule a follow-up appointment in 6 weeks. And then we'll look at it and you should be better by then. Do you have any questions before we begin? Right? That's what they say. They don't say, would you like to get your arm fixed today? Is this something you'd be interested in? No. They say, do you have any questions before we begin? Okay, hold on. I'm sorry this is going to hurt, but we'll get you out of here as soon as possible. And then they do the thing. And that's the difference, in my experience, between a professional who knows they have the solution, they know what's best for the other person, and they're willing to assume the right path because they have the training, the experience, the tools in the toolbox. They know what they're going to do, and they know what's best for you, for your sake, right? Not for their sake, not for the salesperson's sake, but they know what's best for you, and then they just assume, and they move forward. And if you have any questions, you would stop them. Otherwise, you're there and you're looking for a professional and you want that help. And so that's the difference. The order taker gets it to the point where they say, okay, now you decide because I'm trying to be the nice person. The professional says, I'm going to help you because I'm the nice person. I care about you so much. If you don't buy from me right now, I take that as a failure, right? Like if you walked out of the ER and didn't get help, the doctor would take that as a failure. If the doctor doesn't convince you, you need to get surgery done to fix whatever's wrong, they'll see that as a failure professionally and personally. And you as a salesperson want to make that shift in your mind, which is if this person doesn't buy life insurance, doesn't have, you know why. That's why I started with, you got to know why they want or need it. But once you identify that, if they don't buy from you, if you literally let them get off the phone without taking a next step, without signing up, whatever that looks like, if that happens, then you should take that personally and professionally, because you should know that if they don't buy life insurance, but they had this want or need, then you know what could happen in their life, right? So they have this want or need. They want to take care of their kids if something happens. Oh, I don't know. I need to think about it. Then they disappear. You never talk to them again. What happens if something happens to them next week or next month? And now that policy isn't in place. Right? And that's a different pressure. That's different than me being, I got to hit my quota. You know, Jake's telling us that we got to do 12 a day. I'm going to push because I need to hit those numbers. Let's go. Let's try to do it. I want to get the shout out tomorrow. That is one thing versus you need this. I don't care. I can imagine what's going to happen and I don't want to imagine that. And so I want to help you. So let me know how I can help you. And trust me, like here's the greatest gift I was given in sales is that my first real sales job was helping people who were in foreclosure. And I did it over the phone, which I won't even go into the full details of the crazy stuff I learned how to do over the phone, but I learned a lot. However, one of the biggest things I learned was if I was unsuccessful in persuading them to getting help instead of putting their head back in the sand, the sheriff was literally coming on Friday at 10 a.m. to kick them out of their house. It wasn't a maybe if they die next month and they don't have insurance, like we could have helped with that. It is the sheriff is coming on Friday at 10 a.m. to kick them out of the house and then they're homeless, right? And I saw enough people who didn't listen to me that happened to them. And so knowing that consequence in mind totally changed me. Now I forecast with anybody I ever talk to, even as a consultant, when I work with companies, I forecast the turnover, the layoffs, the challenges. If the whole company goes out of business because they can't fix their sales teams, I literally forecast that in my mind. And that's where my persuasion comes from, because I don't want to have that happen to them. And I would feel bad if I failed at helping them. So there's my long answer, Jake, for shifting from order taker.
Yeah, that's great, man. I appreciate that. So I wrote down, you called it refuge. So rapport, yep. Empathy, trust, hope, urgency. Did I hear that correctly?
That is, yeah.
Okay. So I know we can find, you know, like on YouTube videos and trading that you've made out there about that. But I'm real curious on that last letter, urgency, because that's we could all use help there. So help us. How can we create
more urgency? And that's the biggest thing, right? So that urgency piece is the part where the order taker slips. And again, I'm just say this, like order taker is not a derogatory term. I don't say order taker because I'm putting somebody down or I'm trying to put them in a box. It's usually just a state of affairs. It's how you're doing in your sales career. If you're closing the easy ones or you're not having that kind of professional focus, like what I was just talking about, then you might be an order taker. And that's great because if that's the case, most order takers, I know they're really good at rapport, really good at empathy. They care about people, right? They're coming from a place of like, I had these bad experiences. I'm going into this career. I want to help people. I also want to make money, but I want to do it in a way that feels good for me and for them. So the rapport part is good. The empathy part, which is the questions and the listening and the uncovering and the relationship building is good. Usually the order takers in that category, they're really good at building trust because people like them because they're not trying to be salesy and gross. They're just trying to help. And so that's good. The hope part, you know, is about explaining the options relative to what they're looking for. That urgency piece, that's the number one thing. And that's when we go back to that doctor example. That's the difference between that first example of the ER and the second one. The, hey, I'm sure you have some questions. Do you have any questions for me? Do you need time to decide? You know, let me know. I'm going to send you the follow-up email and we'll do that versus the urgency of now, right? The time is always now. And the reason why it's always now, and I'll put a caveat in there in a minute, but the reason why it's always now is that change is scary. Change is super dangerous in our primal minds, right? If we look at where we came from as a species, it wasn't that long ago where literally eating the wrong berry could kill you, a food poisoning. Right? Like in the blink of our species, it wasn't that long ago. So given that, that a part of our brain, the amygdala, is always afraid. It's always on the lookout. It wants to stay in our comfort zone. It doesn't want to change because change equals death. It's just literally the way it works. So if your prospective buyers haven't handed you money right away in the conversation or just ordered it online, then that part of their brain is afraid of change. And your job is to make them feel safe and then move them forward. If you don't have the urgency piece in there, what happens is they'll just put their head back in the sand. They'll retreat back into their comfort zone and they won't make a change because they didn't need to. And that part of their brain will actually tell them that good thing I didn't do that because that was probably dangerous. I'm glad I didn't do it. Like if any of you have ever done that where you went into a store and then you didn't buy, something was off or you didn't feel like it was a good decision. You left and you went, oh man, I'm so glad I didn't buy that. That's what happens if you don't have the urgency piece when you can help somebody. And that's why, you know, Jake and I didn't set this up, like the stuff we were going to talk about, but the progression is very important as far as like understanding why they need it. Because when it comes to the urgency piece, the urgency has to be about them and not you. Where salespeople generally miss the mark and freak people out is they make the urgency about themselves. They make it about, hey, what will it take to get you to sign up today? Like that kind of crap, right? And maybe some of you are doing it. I think it works on some percentage of the population. Most people it doesn't. What is it going to take for you to buy this car today? You know, what do I have to do to keep you from walking out? Like all of those things, that's the urgency. That's the urgency for me, not for you, right? When it's urgency about you, then it's different because then it's about what we talked about. Let's say, why do I need this? Well, I need this life insurance policy because my kids, and if something happens to me, I want to take care of them. And I'm the only one that has the income. So if I pass away, my wife, she's not going to be able to take care of them. And we need to have this in place. So then what happens is when you get to the urgency portion of the conversation, the final part of the conversation, and you mix that with what I was talking about, assuming like a professional, like that doctor, then the urgency becomes, okay, Bob, so now that we've gone through all this, here's what we should do next. Based on what you told me, I know that this is very important. And of course, I don't want anything to happen to you, but life happens and you just never know. And so one of the things is I don't necessarily want to see you wait on this because anything could happen, right? Like, I don't want to scare you. I'm not trying to be a fear monger. And I don't want to put this stuff out there and make it sound like, you know, it's urgent and desperate right now, but I want to see you do it. And usually what I'll do is I'll throw in something about like, it's not for me. There's enough people around that I don't need to force you to buy, but I want to make sure that we get this in place. So here's what we should do now. Or what I use a lot of language is, let's do this. So let's do this. So let's go ahead and get the application started so we can get you going with this. And then that's the urgency. But the key is the urgency is about Bob. The urgency is about Bob's situation. So it's not, hey, if you sign up by Friday or by the end of the month, we have this deal and blah, blah, blah. Like, no, it's not. Because that's my urgency, right? And that actually falls under manipulation. If you read the definition and categories of manipulation, that, hey, if you sign up by the end of the month, blah, 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 or you can get this deal if you sign up today, that's manipulation. And that doesn't work long-term. It leads to buyer's remorse. People regret that later on, or they're always shopping you. And then they're like, they're just going to drop this for that once they get a better deal. So you don't want to do that. You want to make the urgency about them. And when you do that, especially with the right intentions, which is why the authentic persuasion label is very important to me. When you come from an authentic persuading place and have that urgency, that's about Bob and Bob's goals and situations and Bob's wants and needs, it feels so natural and easy, like that doctor professional example, that it's like, okay, we'll go. And if they say no, then you address those concerns. That's their fears coming up. It's nothing personal. You address those, but just keep moving forward. Always focus on now, whether that's the application, whether it's fully signing up, whether it's setting the next appointment, and having something going, that urgency is always now, or else just assume you'll never talk to them again.
Yeah, that's great. Get some feedback here. I think you're definitely helping Ted go from order taker to closer. And yeah, man, so we appreciate your time today. And yeah. I know you have a podcast, you have a book. Tell us about some of the things you got going on. Over the next couple months that we should be looking for.
Sure. And I forgot to mention, so when it comes to that urgency and the refu, the rapport, empathy, trust, hope, urgency, in season one of my podcast, which was pretty much just solo episodes, I actually spent 2 weeks. So there's 10 episodes on that framework. Each pair of episodes, there's one that's like how to do rapport correctly. And then when you do rapport incorrectly, which you might not think it's possible to screw that up, but it is. And so if you want to hear more, like those were some good kind of breakdowns of that. If you find it, what do I have coming up? So, you know, I mentioned to you before we all jumped on and record. So I'm doing stuff with LeadsCon, Leeds Council, and this thing called Industry Impact. So I'm going on a 4-city tour, which should be fun. I'm launching a new podcast called the Scalable Call Center Sales Podcast. Somebody took all things telesales. Otherwise, I would have done that. So I was super mad. But I like you anyway, Jake. So it works out all right. But that's literally, you know, telesales is what I do. So I had to come up with a wordier, longer, more painful name, but it's all good. So I've got that podcast coming out, and that's for, you know, people in, you know, the call center space in sales. There's a lot of, you know, contact center customer service podcasts. Yours is one of the very few sales, like telephone sales. So how do you focus on that? So that one should be fun. Working on some new book projects and excited about getting back into the conference world, speaking at conferences, doing more stuff with training and helping clients.
Awesome. Yeah, definitely helped us out today. Before we go, anybody, got any questions or anything before we let Jason go today?
Jason, I appreciate it. I think I had that same sales experience. I bought a Kirby vacuum when I was a kid, when I was like 19 years old. It was the stupidest thing I ever did. And I 100% think that runs stupid. In the back of my mind, you know, it was the first time I ruined my credit the first time.
Yeah, and it's tough, right? Like as a 19-year-old, you're excited. Kirby vacuum salespeople are really good at the game that they play, but you probably didn't need a $3,000 vacuum as a 19-year-old.
I didn't even have a car. I'm just guessing. I had a skateboard for how I got to work.
Yeah, yeah. So that's the crazy thing, right? And like what you probably are thinking is like, I don't want to be like that. Like that was terrible. That set you up for a lot of pain. And most people say like, yeah, don't be like that. But then the problem is people go all the way to the other extreme, which is, you know, doormat if they're not careful. And what the world needs is right in the middle. They need sales professional who cares and also just knows, like, I'm going to help you. I don't care.
I'm curious because you've talked about like service and impact, and you said you have like a 4-city trip on impact. So what's been, I believe that the true gift is in the giving. So what's been the biggest impact that you've received from you just giving to people and being in service? So what's been the biggest impact you received that's kind of catapulted you into the direction that you're in right now?
So I would say in the world of the consulting that I've done, one of the biggest things is I was working on my book and I became a consultant because the job I was at ended, the company ended. And I was like, okay, I want to go into consulting is what I had planned on doing. It's why I went back to school and got my MBA was to kind of refine what I knew. Again, I'm a dude with a marine biology degree. Like it didn't make any sense. No, it still doesn't make sense on paper, but I'm here. And then I launched my podcast. I launched my podcast in April, 2 years ago with no goal for sponsorship, nothing other than just putting out a massive amount of content, like 5 days a week content, and doing that, just giving that content away and trusting that if I help enough people and I put that out there, then it will all work out. For me, the Zig Ziglar quote is always my mantra and has been for years. You know, you help enough other people get what they want and you'll get everything you want in life. Like that's just what I do and it always works out. And, you know, balancing that with in the sales environment, obviously not just giving people and then hoping they buy, you got to move them forward, but just doing tons of content. And then last year, I think I was on 75 podcasts as a guest plus my own podcast. And I just love putting out this content. And then, you know, it's just there. Anything I can do to help salespeople become more effective, even if I never meet them, right? Like David Meltzer calls it, you know, planting seeds that become trees that I'll never sit under, then that's good enough for me.
Nice. Have you been on a podcast with David Meltzer?
I had him on my podcast. Yeah. I'm not big time enough to be on his podcast, but I did have him on mine. I was pretty excited. Yeah. I had him on my podcast. And then a week later, I had Mark Victor Hansen, author of The Chicken Soup for the Soul. Plus, he's also written he's also sold 500 million books. His goal is to be the first person to sell a billion books. He was the guest on my 400th podcast. And then I decided to just finish on top. I'm like, all right, we're good. I'm just going to stop there.
Yeah, cool. I was about to hook you up if you hadn't jammed with David Meltzer.
He's awesome.
They send me a lot of guests.
Todd Armstrong is really cool. That's I got introduced to Todd, who introduced me, you know, and set me up with David. So yeah, great stuff.
Awesome, cool man.
I have a question, Jason. So when it comes to urgency, typically, do you demonstrate the urgency in the middle of your presentation, or do you like to do that right before the close so that's right on their conscience mind? How do you go about that?
That's a great question. And that's where what I have found by experimenting but observing lots of people that I've managed and or dealt with and or also as a customer. So as a customer, I'm always observing. I can't turn that part of my brain off. So it's always spinning and noticing. That's where the REFU framework is so important because it's also in that order. That's why I can't spell anything better with it. I came up with that 11 years ago and it's literally, it's so awkward sounding, but I can't even switch the words out because other than rapport, what word am I going to use to make it catchy? It just is what it is. The key though, with that is that order and doing each step completely before you move on. The challenge is that a lot of people in sales want to throw the urgency in the beginning, right? Or they want to throw it in the middle. And then what happens, like, wait a second, why are you pressuring me? You don't know me yet. Or we're not to that point yet. Or you haven't even showed me what the solution is, right? You haven't shown me what that is. Now, again, keeping in mind, everyone's sales process is different. So if you're talking about a single call where the goal is to have them fill out an application, or maybe it's to, you know, sign up completely, you're going to want to do all five of those things in that order. And the time frame for each one, it's not like, okay, I spend 5 minutes here, I got to spend 10 minutes here, I got to do this. It's going to be relative to you and them, but it's that order. Because again, if you do the urgency too early, it's like, hey, I'm Jason, we need to get you signed up for insurance today. Oh, okay, bro. Like, you don't know me. This seems, you know, what's the catch? Like, what are we doing? Like, why are you pushing me? Right. And so it's about, I got to get to know you. I got to get to know your situation. I want to know that why. And then what happens is, okay, based on that, here's what I can offer, which is the hope stage. And hope isn't just like, here's what we do for life insurance and here's how great it is. It's here's how this would help you and pay you relative to your situation that you told me that's important to you. Let's go ahead and get the application started. Like, it's just, and it's not even, you don't even call it like, hey, we need to do this now. It's just, I'm the professional, I'm assuming. All right, so the next step, Brooks, is we're gonna fill out the application and we're gonna work on getting you approved. You don't even see it. We don't even call it whatever it is. It's just like, wait, am I, yeah, I guess I'm signing up. Okay, cool, let's do it, right? Or they say, Brooks says, whoa, hold on, I don't know if I'm ready for that. Okay, great, let's talk about it. What questions do you have? Because the thing is, Brooks, we both know that this would help you because of what you said. I know you're worried about your kids because your wife doesn't work. And so if anything happens, so I get it, but I also know this is new to you and you don't understand life insurance. Let me answer those questions so you feel comfortable before we move forward, right? But I know the answer is now. The answer is always now.
So if somebody at the end of the close gave you a, let me think about it, you would come back and say, hey, okay. Hey, Jason, let's talk about it.
Yeah, I'd say, well, depending on the conversation, the relationship, and depending on how feisty I'm feeling, I've got one or two answers. And Jake, do we still have time? I'm good on my end if you guys are.
Yeah, we got a couple more minutes.
Okay. So usually what I'll tell people, say I need to think about it. It's like, I totally understand. I know this is a lot of information, but let me ask you. So I've done this for a long time. I've been in this business for a long time. I've been helping people for a long time. When I hear I need to think about it, there's usually one of two reasons. One is you like me, you're trying to be nice, but you're trying to get rid of me and you don't want to buy, right? You just don't want to do it. It doesn't seem like it's a good fit. And you're just trying to blow me off, but you're trying to be nice about it. The other one is you genuinely need to think about it and there's stuff that you're unsure about and you want to research it and you want to figure out how to make this the right decision for you, since we both know it is, because we already talked about that, right? And so which one of those is it? Then they say, yeah, I'm not interested. I really don't want to buy. And that's it. Okay, sounds good. I'll send you some information and we'll just leave it at that. Then I know not to chase you. Now, usually what happens, they say, no, I just want to do some research. I'm not sure. I wasn't expecting this. I knew we were going to talk about this, but you know, I wasn't planning on signing up for it today, right? Those classic kind of responses. But you draw that out and say, I totally get it. Now, so that I can send you the best information possible so that you can have stuff to research, because I can send you tons of stuff. Like, my company provides so much information. You can go online. You could go down so many dark holes of researching that you will literally never make a decision. So let's do this. So I can send you the best information possible that would help you. What questions you have, what are you looking for? And then I can help you out with that. Now I want them to tell me, oh, I'm just not sure about the price. I'm not sure about committing this. I don't know how, blah, blah, blah. Okay, sounds good. And then I will take the opportunity to try to answer those on the spot. The other thing is people say, send me more information. Well, that's great. The thing is, there's so much out there. My job is actually to help you over the phone. It's what I get paid for. It's what they have me do. So I'm happy to answer that for you, help you out with any questions you have. So what kind of stuff are you looking for? Whichever route feels best in that conversation. And if they do want the email and you do need to send them more information, now it's specific. Right. And it's like, okay, sounds good. Cause some people, you know, you're not going to close everyone on one shot or in that conversation. And so you will do the follow, but now it's more specific. And then when you follow up, that's more specific. Instead of what a lot of people do is send me more information. Okay, sounds good. I'll send you an email. When's a good time to follow up? Tuesday or Wednesday next week? Right. Should I follow up with you at 3 o'clock on Thursday? Okay, let me do this. Like, that's just hope. You're just hoping at that point versus, what is it that you have questions about? I'll send it to you. No, no pressure. Like, there's, you know, 7 billion people on the planet. I don't need you to buy life insurance, but I want to help you, but I don't need you to buy it. Like, that's not going to change my world. Does that help?
I appreciate that, Jason. It really does. And then going into detail on that, it kind of gets rid of the whole smoke screen of their objection in the first place. And you know, start to evaluate what the real pushback is. So I really appreciate it, Jason.
You're welcome. And the key is, and this is what I'll tell you as we just finished, is the key is the authentic persuasion, the actual caring about people, kind of like Alyssa mentioned, it's the service, right? Sales is service. I want to help you. Again, I mean it. There's 7 billion people on the planet. If you don't buy from me, it's fine. I used to tell people that in the credit card when I was helping people with credit cards. They'd be like, well, I need to think about it. I was like, okay. I said, here's the deal. I'm not trying to push you into this, but here's what I do know is that when we hang up the phone and I go to bed tonight, I don't have $50,000 in credit card debt at 29%. I don't. And I also know that there's other people I can talk to. But if we hang up and you don't fix this, you still have $50,000 in credit card debt at 29% that you're never going to pay off. So this isn't about me. This is about you. You just let me know when you're ready. I just hit people right in the face with that because they're not expecting it. That's not what a salesperson would do, but that's what somebody who cares would do. And when you're doing the authentic persuasion side and it's just coming to you like from you being you, you just call it like it is. Professionally, I don't want Jake to send me an email. You know what my reps are saying now? They're doing all kinds of crazy stuff on the phone. And we got all these. No, you got to be authentic and you got to be empathetic, right? Like it's got to come from that place with your intentions. But just, you know, this is what I tell people all the time. When in doubt, don't do what you think salespeople are supposed to do. Like push come to shove. Like what's a salesperson supposed to do or say? Yeah. You know, I'll be a professional, but don't do that.
That actually really works. Like the last couple of weeks, I've actually started telling my clients, hey, Brooks, like honestly, at the end, after I tried closing them, I'll say them at the end. I've actually, Brooks, if we get your policy in place, that actually is not going to make or break my salary at all. Like, no. I want you to feel comfortable with what you're getting. I want you to be confident what the information that we're going to. So what questions do you have for me? And then kind of go from there again. And then there's no pressure for them. So that's a great line to use.
I love it. I've used that one forever. I've taught people that kind of thing forever. Because again, in a land of abundance, no matter what you're selling, there's more than enough potential customers. You don't need to stranglehold each one and force them. But I'm going to use some urgency because I care about you and I want to help you. So.
Awesome. Jason, let's give it up for Jason, everybody. This was fantastic. Telesales persuasion. And I persuade everybody to go and buy the book. Or maybe we'll ask Robin to buy it for us. So we'll get that process going for sure. And
have Robin reach out to me. We'll set something up for sure.
Okay. All right. So just reach out to you directly versus going on Amazon.
Because I sell them through my website directly instead of Amazon also, but then I do group packages also. So
okay.
Yeah, right. We'll set it up.
Yeah, we'll set that up. All right. Thanks again, Jason. And we're going to be directing everybody to your podcast. We appreciate your time today, brother.
Yes. Thanks, everyone. Thanks, everyone, for being here and wanting to do things in a different way. I appreciate Jake and what you're putting together. To me, it holds hope that we can all change the way sales is done to make it less gross. So I appreciate everyone being here, taking notes. So thank you.
Nice. Thank you. Appreciate you, brother.
Thank you, Jason. I appreciate your time.
All right, guys.